I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're exploring the intersection between food, agriculture, and competition. Learn how a chicken raising contest in the 1940s led to the poultry industry we have today.
And they were going to run a contest and try and develop what they would call the chicken of tomorrow.
We'll also venture into the world of agricultural video games, where a new set of tractors is making a lot of fans happy.
The biggest addition to 19 was the John Deere's. That's what everyone was hyped for.
And we pay a visit to a group of Indian restaurants that aren't on the friendliest of terms.
Usually they wait for my restaurant, but after long wait, they go to next door or downstairs. But this is how they do business. They completely copy whatever we do.
Embrace your competitive spirit and be the first to listen to new Meat and Three episodes by subscribing now. That's Meat plus sign THREE, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz.
I'm the other host, Greg Bresnitz, driving from Rain Parish or near Rain Parish back to Lafayette, Louisiana on the eve of my wedding.
Yes, and this episode is going to air on the, what is the day after tomorrow?
The day after tomorrow, the 7th, April 7th.
April 7th, after you are wed. We just sat down with Anthony, who's second generation, and Meg, who's third generation, of Hawk's Crawfish.
Yeah, we went down a dirt road and a gravel road to no road and got the whole history and evolution of crawfish. And what I could easily say is the epicenter of the current crawfish boom.
Yeah, I would say that these people
are responsible
for clean crawfish.
And thus,
well, popularizing clean crawfish.
Yes.
And we are going into the archives. We're pulling from one of our favorite bands, X-Cops. Shout out to the Williamsburg music singing, right?
Sure.
Sure. Okay, well, here we go. Sit back, relax, as we dig into some crawfish here on Snacky Tunes on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky Tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz.
I'm the other half your host, Greg Bresnitz.
And we are coming from officially the middle of nowhere.
Down a dirt road. Gravel, then paved.
Then dirt.
Then dirt.
In between two lakes where the crawfish reside. And we are at Hawks. We have Anthony and Meg. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So first question, how did we wind up here? And by we, I mean you guys. How do you pick a restaurant to be in this beautiful backcountry?
In 1974, I think it was, my dad built this little small building because at that time, this was an all-field community, a lot of all-field activity. And this was a kind of a hangout for all the rig workers, and they would have suppers and they cook plate lunches and stuff. It was very small. And over time, the building was already here when the oil field went bust in the, I think, 1980 or 81. The building was vacant. Mm. So about that time, me and my father were both raising crawfish. And it's not like it was today. It's hardly nobody ate crawfish. Now the whole country's eating crawfish.
I mean, crawfish was never considered a popular thing to eat until the 90s, right?
Like, correct.
Right?
So set the scene for us in the early 80s.
Yeah, like, what's it like?
Who was eating it, or how was it?
It was just local people.
Yeah.
A few of them were sent to around the New Orleans area.
Sure.
Very few sent to around the Houston area. But at that time, we had hundreds and hundreds of acres of crawfish. And we were raising crawfish for a cash flow because it was in the farming industry. So because of that, I was selling crawfish, huge crawfish, large, beautiful,
yeah,
for 17 cents a pound. And
what is it now?
Oh my God.
About four some a pound.
Four some a pound.
Right.
But back then, couldn't even get rid of them at 17 cents. So since we already had the building here, my dad had decided that we were going to open up a little cafe type restaurant just for crawfish to try to move some of our better crawfish.
Sure.
Right as we were kind of renovating and building tables and stuff, somebody had told him, he had heard through the grapevine, that Texas A&M University had devised a system that would clean crawfish. So he was very intrigued with this. So we called the university, and the guy that was in charge of that department told us that he would meet us over there on a Saturday morning and give us a tour of their facility.
Hmm.
So we went, and it was small. It was about 8 feet long by 4 foot wide, and they were purging some crawfish, cleaning the crawfish.
And this was a tank?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
With a little aerator in there. And as we looked at it, we got the general concept of what they were trying to do and how long it would take. So when we came back over here, we had that in mind, and we just built a much bigger facility.
Right.
Huge facility that could handle thousands of pounds of crawfish.
Because our crawfish, just quickly, how are they grown? How were they grown back then, or how did you raise them?
Okay, it's a cycle. Crawfish, the reason they raise a lot of crawfish in this area is because of the rice industry. After they harvest the rice, the leftover hay, or stubble as we call it, becomes crawfish food the following year.
Mm.
Crawfish food is decaying plant matter. That's what they live on. So this leftover rice stubble, this hay, I should say, in the field, was just wasted. It was just there. So by raising crawfish, the alternating crawfish and rice, the crawfish have a food supply, and the land gets to rest a year before they plant rice in it again.
Got it.
That's why they rotate.
So before that, you had the purging system. Was crawfish which is too time consuming, or was it just it was too hard to clean them, or was it dirtier? Than
yeah, it's much dirtier. Yeah.
Nobody wanted to eat it because they didn't taste good.
Right.
Nobody wanted to eat that.
That's mud bugs.
Yeah. You know? Mud bugs. Not the crawfish that we're used to today. Right.
Right. So it comes from the when they literally would be in your ditch. You know, and so that's how kind of crawfish started. We're in ditches and in your ponds or whatever. Yeah. If you had rice ponds or rice fields. And so as it got more and more popular, and then I'm pretty sure my grandfather and my dad made it as popular as today. People would try to copy the purging system.
Right.
You know, like you got people like, oh, look, I'm purging these crawfish in this ice chest with this water.
Nope.
No. Oh, I'm going to throw some salt in there. What?
Yeah.
So you're already cooking your crawfish.
Right.
People...
So how soon was it from when you built this place, you got the purging system, when did things begin to kind of represent the modern day crawfish?
The very first night we opened.
Well, okay, so it's the 1983. No cell phones, no internet, no Instagram, no nothing. How did people find this place?
Word of mouth. We never did advertise.
Yeah.
Just word of mouth. And people would call... Because from the very first night that we opened, there were lines outside because nobody had eaten clean crawfish before.
Mm.
This was new to the whole area, and they were huge and they were clean. And
so when you say huge, are you talking about like Langoustine huge? Like when you think
five to a pound?
Oh my God! And what was that? And so now they're not as big anymore because everyone's eating them so quickly. Because
right.
I imagine that those old ones they're older, right? They've
right.
been around for longer.
What large crawfish comes from any type you raise any type of animal or creature on virgin ground, it's going to grow and supersede everything else. And that, over time, it gets back down to what it's supposed to be. Anytime you raise a crop on virgin land, you always make a way better yield. The size of the crop is no different. They were bigger, they were huge. So over the years, over the, like the next 20 years, crawfish were huge because it was always finding new ground, virgin land. Different people were getting involved because there was a cash flow for the farmers. So now everything's saturated now. Now it's, you don't have as much big crawfish anymore. Mm. But we still do because we grade them. We kind of hand select them. We kind of pick and choose pretty hard. This is our business.
So 1983 happens, first night of success. What are the next
5 years, 10 years?
What do the 5, 10 years look like, and how do things begin to change in the surrounding area?
We've added on 5 times. That was all done in the first 12 years.
Mm.
When you walk in here, I tell everybody, look at the floor. Every different color tile on the floor is an add-on because the old tile was discontinued, so we had to find a different color tile. So basically, if you look at the floor, it tells the whole story.
It's like the rings of a tree, right?
Right.
Just the color of the tile. So when did you start seeing people from outside of Louisiana, Texas, showing up here? When did the rest of the world start catching on about
crawfish?
Probably
about the second or third year.
Okay.
Like I said, the first year was local people. And after that, word kind of spread out. And then we'd get visitors from other areas. Nobody had, as far as the lines, till this day, we still have lines outside. Last Sunday, we had a line to the road before we unlocked the door.
Mm. I mean, and it's a big place. Oh, yeah. It's like almost 200 seats.
Correct.
So, okay, for people who don't, so from not being from here, you know, when I was driving down with my fiance, you know, I saw all the huts and everything, and I was like, can we go there? Like, oh, it's not season yet. For us from New York and for Los Angeles, you can get crawfish year-round. So for those who are uneducated, can you educate them about when is crawfish season, like what precipitates it, like right. What makes for good crawfish season, what's the range of it, just right. For people who don't understand that it's not
Let something Let me ask different. You this. When you say you get crawfish year-round.
No. Greg says he gets crawfish year-round.
No, there are restaurants.
That serve ball that, crawfish
no,
year-round?
No, yeah, but it's frozen.
Right, that's what it is. That's what we're about to say. Okay, so that's
not... No, but, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So if you don't...
You can get crawfish year-round.
What is that called? Parboiled or whatever?
Yeah, it's parboiled. So it's like sure, there's like, you know, there's a place in New York called La Silla that like you can get crawfish year-round, Szechuan crawfish year-round. It's obviously, you know, frozen in vast quantities and they always have it. But it's here, it's, you know, please explain. Please educate us as I have now been educated.
Okay. The crawfish industry originated here because of our climate and the soil. They have tried in other areas of the country, but it won't work because that's basically why this is rice country.
Mm.
There's a hard pan underneath the topsoil. So it holds water. It's not sandy, so it don't just drain right through. So other places have tried it. Arkansas, for instance, raises a lot of rice. They have a hard pan, but their climate is different than ours.
It's drier.
And it's a little too cold in the wintertime. They have too long of winters. That's why South Louisiana, that's why it's so popular over here and it's such a big industry over here.
And so it starts around the beginning of the year, February.
Right. Some people have it in November, but that's going to be some little bitty peanut crawfish. You're not going to want to eat that.
Over the years, the farming industry has changed some and has affected the crawfish industry. Used to have a lot of crawfish that were caught, harvested in December, late November and December. Now it's pushed back to January because of the farming practices. They don't reflood the fields till later. They've done a lot of studies and they've learned that the farmers can benefit more in the long run if they wait and flood at a later date than we did back in the early days.
It was like
days.
August. For the rice. They used to flood the ponds in August. We used to dry rice. Right. And
back then, right after we'd harvest rice, we start flooding for crawfish.
Yeah.
But all the local universities have done studies and they figured out that if you wait and flood like in late October, instead of August. You, the harvest is much better, and more quantity in the springtime than before. So that's why a lot of farmers do it now.
So, with the shifting environment and what's going on and seasons and things like that, have you seen an effect on crawfish? You know, with hurricanes coming in and different storms.
No.
None of that's affected it.
No.
The freezes do.
The drought does.
Right.
So the weather does. Yeah.
So yeah, I guess maybe if not the hurricanes, but the shifting in weather patterns. And how do you adjust for that?
There's a lot to be said about the environment. Crawfish is tough.
Yeah, but we're going to be... There is... Obviously, global warming does exist.
No, it doesn't.
See?
Oh, okay.
All right. That's why he's like, no. And I'm like,
okay.
Yes. No.
Well, we'll leave it at that. All right. We're going to take a quick break.
All right.
We're going to pull a song from the archives, and then we're going to come back with Anthony Meg of Hawks Crawfish here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Dad's been shucking dozens since 42. Iron tub ice down full of Falstaff brew. Black hat of sun, Bobby Charles called blue. Catholic church bells toll the Louisiana blues. Oyster rake scraping down Grand Isle Way. Don't get no more salty than Barataria Bay. 100 years my family's done it this way. Some folks call it work, but it's just another day. And in life there's always love. Comes into your heart from up above. Gather my dreams and put them out to sea. Gulf Stream and I'm free. Politicians, trappers, priests, and more. They've all strolled through these double French doors. I was so busy just trying to keep their glasses full. Folks laughing, drinking, just shooting the bull. Vermilion parish sunsets across my bow. Just slipped off the edge and I don't know how. I turn the key in the lock and close up shop. The owl flies round the old steeple's clock. And in life there's always love. Comes into your heart from up above. Gather my dreams and put them out to sea. Gulf Stream and I'm free. Neon light gently taps me on the shoulder. And the ice in the glass melts under the whiskey that I pour. The salt in the air from the storm off the coast. As I pull from my glass and offer up this toast. Been a good run, it's been a good haul. My nets are full, time they're pulling my trawl. Mes amis, ma famille, spécial pour mon père. Que tes filets soient pleins de fruits de mer. And in life there's always love. Comes into your heart from up above. Gather my dreams and put them out to sea. Gulf Stream and I'm free.
Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are with Anthony, second generation. Meg, third generation of Hawks Crawfish.
Let's talk about how the third generation get in there. So grandpa and dad are crawfishing. Hawks is on its fifth expansion. When do you...
It's on its fifth tile pattern.
Fifth tile pattern. When are you stepping into the picture? And did you always feel that there was crawfish in your future? Or was it something that you like left and prodigal
daughter? All my birthday parties were over here. We'd have like little parties.
I mean,
and
I want to have my birthday parties here. We're so talking about a wedding here.
Right, yeah. So we used to have a jukebox and a pool table back there and a cigarette machine. And then my grandfather would literally sit at this right here at this bar, and my dad would be running around a lot. My grandfather just kind of, he was a good delegator. That's a good way to put it. But anyway, I started out hustling people at the pool hall. Then I got old enough to go make drinks, then bus tables. Then I started waitressing. Mm. And I'm all in college at this point.
So you worked your way up?
I worked my way up, you know?
I mean, that's a good say. It's that I know the first generation and the second generation, and I still have to work my way up.
Yeah. No. Look, I have to wait. If I come here with some friends or just my wife, I have to put my name down and take a number.
Just like everybody else.
There's no back door.
The only thing I get is I don't pay for my meal at the end.
Okay.
Fair. Hey, that's good, right?
Yeah.
That's.
But so when did you?
I started bowling in my backyard.
Okay.
All right. So I started bowling in my backyard for festival.
Private bowls
and kind of.
Same recipe, same process.
Same everything. Kind of honed my own skills. And about the fifth or sixth year, I was like, man, people really love this. I should come in and like ask dad if I can create this business.
So was your boils were separate down? Was it just you got skills from her, or would you ask for tips, or like it's something you had to prove on your own?
I had to prove it on my own.
And did you give her any secrets, any tips?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He told me how put the seasoning in after you put the crawfish in, or it's going to overflow.
There was definitely
some direction.
All the basics were laid down.
Yeah.
She just went from there.
So you laid out the puzzle pieces, and you knew what the final puzzle picture looked like,
right.
And you had to put it together yourself.
Would you say that it was numbers of boils or number of seasons? Like, you, like, did a season, then you took it off, and you thought about it, or, like, how many boils until you felt that, like, you got to a good place?
I just kept having people say, man, you should do this.
Yeah.
Like, at these boils. It kept getting bigger and bigger every year. And so, finally, I had started the bike shop, and it was year two of the bike shop. It was 2015.
Name of the bike shop?
It's Hub City Cycles.
Downtown Lafayette,
across from Parc Sanssouci. You
great
can't
location.
Miss it.
It's awesome.
And you ship those bikes?
I do ship those bikes. Oh, they expand. But anyway, so 2015 arises, and I go to my dad, and I had a business plan. I proposed to him, and I was like, this is what I want to do. And he was like, okay, go ahead, do it. First year, I had a flatbed trailer, and he let me borrow his flatbed trailer. You know how hard that was to load up everything on that trailer, get the crawfish in the back of the truck, then at the end of the bowl, after you worked for 5 or 6 hours, load it back all up, then get to your house and unload it all again?
Very hard.
Wash it, clean it. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, because you got to be on that, right, for washing, cleaning, and making sure.
So
anytime you food with seafood,
you have to clean it.
And that's why our business is so good.
We are so clean. Yeah.
Right. Because it starts from a cleaner product, right?
So,
give us the evolution. So it was a flatbed truck.
So second year is 2016. My dad's like, it's time. I was like, okay, we did it. He's like, you did a great job. We were successful. I think we did like 10 boils.
What were you looking for?
Yeah, and how did you know that she'd achieved craw?
Now that she's done it, you can tell us what the internal dad guidelines were.
I've never heard
of she's an entrepreneur. Right.
I was waiting to see if she would still be interested the following year.
Mm.
If it was still in her heart. And it was. It definitely was. In fact, she wanted to expand on it. So that's when I jumped in. I said, well, we're going to grow from here.
Were you nervous that it might have been just like a flight of fancy or easy because the family name came right there? So right. You could like trade on the family name. You wanted to make sure that was like a deep commitment.
Now, look, I created a logo.
I love
got
that
on
logo.
My website. I tried to, you know, business cards. Like, so I brought things to the table as well.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't just show up and be like, all right, I'm going to take your crawfish and your name and I'm running.
Yeah. And
no, I'm like, here, look, let me give you this awesome website. Look at this logo that I paid to get designed, you know, yeah, like.
She's great.
And I mean, I brought it to the next level, you know.
So
I'm Hawks Bowl Up LLC. He's Hawks. You know, like, we got our own entity here.
So second year.
We're not on the same bill. So I buy my crawfish from just
so
like everybody.
So when he
else.
Comes to a boil, does he have to pay at the end?
He's only, I don't think he's ever been one mole. He's been to one of my boils.
Time doesn't permit it.
I haven't, I'll pay.
This is my wife, Jennifer.
She made the awesome bread pudding that we're eating.
So good.
It's so good.
She bakes and cooks here just about all day.
That had two failed phenomenal on the way in. So 2016, you go from flatbed to what?
I got a full-fledged, awesome double-axle trailer with brakes, enclosed trailer.
Okay.
Okay, and so I still have my burner. I still boil on-site. I don't like to do boils that are too big. We haven't gotten to that. We keep talking about it. We're going to get us a big rig and kind of start doing with the crank crawfish, and you go and do thousands of pounds. We just don't know if our season, like, we definitely want to keep the product as is. Mm, you yeah. know, I think you lose some of your stuff. People, you can tell when you go to a restaurant how clean their crawfish
is. Too commercialized.
It's too commercial. By how spicy it is. If you can't eat four crawfish before your nose is running and your eyes are watering and you can't drink enough water, that means their crawfish is dirty.
I had that happen to me earlier this week. I'll tell you off mic.
And that's
like,
it.
I was like suffering. I was like,
you should be able to. You know how people cook food and, you, and then they're like,
yeah. You're trying to camouflage.
Correct.
Because
it's nasty, y'all. If you look at the bottom
things.
Of the purging tanks
yeah.
after we purge and clean, because we clean out our purging tanks just as yeah. you know often, we got to clean it all up. You would be appalled.
So
you would never eat dirty crawfish again.
So you know, crawfish is seasonal, right?
Correct.
So it's a couple months of the year. Some seasons are longer than other. What do you, and then also all of the other crawfish people and all the shacks and the places do on the off season to maintain financially? What do you? How do you keep the lights on during the off season?
Well, I don't know about most of everybody else is in a different industry. This is more or less a side business. It's part-time. Personally, I have some cattle. I take care of a lot of different, we have rental properties and stuff that I do.
And we pick up cans on side of the road.
We do what we gotta do, guys, right?
Because right around October.
Do what you gotta do.
October.
Also do pressure washing. No,
But I mean, I imagine that it drives tourism and people come down here and you have people come to restaurants, but it's got to be a little bit tougher during the off season.
I think for some people, that's why they close every year. They think they can do it. They think it's going to be easy. They see how busy that we are or that other people are.
Yeah.
And so they'll just open up a shop and they'll spend way too much money on it. And guess what happens? It fails the first. You don't see that same hut. You see a different name on that hood.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah. So for me, like, I have a bicycle shop. So actually, the bicycle business is up and down too, right? It's a small business. So actually, the crawfish helps sustain the bike shop.
Right, because the
right?
bike shop is like summer, spring.
Right, seasonal as well.
Seasonal. And then the crawfish is like winter, mm-hmm. fall.
Takes care
yeah.
of it. Yeah. So.
Yeah, so when people get into this game, and obviously, like, the barrier to entry for growing it, how, like, what, to start growing your crawfish, and how, and you say you buy your crawfish like anybody else, do you buy from here, or those fields out there is yours, or like?
No. So my dad has, we have different people that we buy from, different farmers.
Yeah.
And so every day they'll bring their crawfish in, we put them in the purging tanks, and then we sort through them after the purging process is over. It's between 24, 36, 48 hours, just depending, you know, then they rotate them, and then... So I come and buy his perch crawfish, and I have to negotiate with him. He's a hard businessman. In fact, we butt heads a lot, him and I. We have one thing that my dad and I have in common is that we got a big heart, and we love each other. And my stepmom, we're family. Like every Wednesday and Thursday, it's just the three of us here. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we'll have lunch together every Wednesday and Thursday. We talk about what's going on in our lives. You got to keep that going. You know how people like that say they're in family business? It's crazy.
Yeah.
That's because they're not communicating.
Yeah.
You gotta say what's going on. And sometimes, you know, it's hard for some of us, you know, but we get through it. I'm just like, Dad, this is business. There's no emotion in business. It's like there's no crying in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
But after he tells her that, she'll call later and say, Dad, you were right.
I'm yeah. Oh, yeah, you got to think about it. It's a long drive back to Lafayette, you know?
There's a lot of
pavement to think.
Not a lot of cell phone service either. So from the 80s until now, I mean, what have you seen that's been changed? And what have you seen that's really kind of like the crawfish like game or industry? And I know you said the growing season, but like about the businesses, you said it was saturated. Has it gone too far? Where like what is the current state of affairs in 2019?
Actually, the whole country's eating crawfish now,
mm-hmm.
and they have to come from here. So demand has gotten greater and greater and greater to the point where they can't hardly produce any more crawfish than what we're producing now. It's a limited industry. The supply is limited. But the whole country, the demand is so great now that
that's why we're paying more for crawfish.
Yeah,
it's hard for these little small places because they're paying at a higher price, but they're not going as far as everyone else. Like, you know, that
crawfish is following the same path as the lobster.
Mm.
Lobster used to only be for poor people to eat.
Yeah, prison food.
Right. And now it has evolved to only wealthy people can afford to eat lobster on a regular basis.
Same with
crawfish. Same way. But like I said, when I jumped in, when we started this, 17 cents a pound. And I think that was the last year it ever got to 17 cents. From then on, it's been uphill all the way.
And why do you think that has happened?
Demand.
No, but what's been driving the demand for the crawfish?
More and more people started eating them. Whereas back in the early, when we first started, it was only local people that ate crawfish. The rest of the country didn't even know what that was. They're using it for fish bait or whatever. And as people started eating and things started growing and tourists would come through. But once they ate them, they loved them. They'd go back to wherever they were. They wanted crawfish. First thing you know, in the early 90s, I think it was, around 1990, I was delivering some live crawfish to around the Daytona Beach area, Cocoa Beach, Florida area. Local restaurants that tried, and I'd go teach them how to cook them and everything. And I quit doing it after the second year because it was too far.
Yeah.
My business here was suffering. I had to stay going too long. So I erased that thought. Since then, that part of the country is eating crawfish now. And a lot of my friends have taken on the responsibility of delivering crawfish in those areas and marketing them. I don't because I don't have the time. But that's just one area. Some of my other friends have gone to Atlanta, Georgia, Nashville, North Carolina, all over. Last year, the week before Easter, I got a phone call from Chamber of Commerce there's a little small town, I don't remember the name of the town, in California, Southern California. And they wanted to order 8,000 pounds to be delivered 2 weekends later. That was the weekend after Easter. Because the little town wanted to have a crawfish festival.
Huh. I guess that's, just to put in perspective, how many pounds of crawfish do you go through on a busy night? Or
a lot.
A lot?
Yeah.
Like a lot, like in the thousands?
I'm about the half. I'm half of what he does. So like, we actually text each other at night. He's always like, how you did? And I'll tell him, and he's always double what I did. So I think that together we're doing pretty well.
So I mean, I was just up in upstate New York and they were doing a crawfish boil. You know, it's not like they're getting it. There's not like a crawfish Woodstock for them. It's right. Coming from here.
But there are crawfish up here.
I've actually seen some of the people on like the cooking channels, the cooking networks.
Yeah.
Try to boil crawfish.
Oh, man.
And they're raw.
They butcher them all up. You know, like, but at least the whole country's watching and kind of taking on this notion that they are edible and they're good.
Oh, they're great. So
Are there tips, without giving away any trade secrets, a few things that people always do wrong that you could just share and say, like,
oh, yeah,
just do these
all
things
day long? You okay, got well, time?
Yeah, all right, instead of the wrong
let's
things.
Do, let's try. Okay. So I'll say two things and then you say two things.
Okay, okay. Great.
All right, so I think this soaking, people want to soak their crawfish. We're gonna ball them and then we're going to turn the ball off and let them sit there. And then after, we're going to let them sit there for 30 minutes, sometimes to an hour. We're going to take them out and then throw ice on them. Now you go.
Don't do that.
Don't do that, people.
No. Take the crawfish and pour salt on them and purge them with salt. And all they're doing is killing the crawfish. Crawfishes are freshwater crustacean. They can't live in salt water.
So they kill them before they
kill them right before they cook them. And it makes them spit up what they have in their mouth. That's not the part that you're eating. You're eating what's on the south end.
The poop tail. That's what you want to get clean, not the esophagus.
Yeah. That's why we clean it from the inside out. That's why it takes 2 days. It's a 2-day process.
And has crawfish gotten to the point where people are passing off imitation crawfish yet?
Oh, like crab? No. Yeah, yeah. No, I don't think they'll ever do that.
We're not there yet?
No. But whoever does that, they're going to be rich.
Well, listen, we want to thank you. If people want to come find you, visit you, just or follow along from the other side of the country, how can they?
Check us out on hawkscrawfish.com.
That Hawks website.
Hawks Facebook page. Hawks Ball Up. That's me.
How far will you travel?
Oh, we can talk about it. I'll go as far as you can.
Okay.
As far as your wallet can go, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
We actually have people that come see us from all over the world.
Yeah.
We had somebody from Australia last night.
I had someone from France last night.
Somebody flew in from New York last weekend just to come eat crawfish.
I mean, listen, I will say that I've been obsessed from afar since that New York Times article came out and just said these are the people who are doing the real thing. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. And we thank you for sitting down with us. And
looking forward to tonight.
Looking forward to tonight.
I'll be bowling for you in a little bit.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we have another song from the archives and then a live band here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hallway home with Brandon Boy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Dana Cowan, and I'm the host of Speaking Broadly here on HRN. Every week, I conduct intimate interviews with the brilliant, powerful women in the food world. We discuss their lives, their careers, and the ways in which they navigate the world at large. You can find Speaking Broadly wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
We are very excited to have ex-cops in the house, or one half of ex-cops in the house. Why don't we do the around the horn, say who you are, what you play, what you do.
I'm a Brian.
What's your sign?
Brian, I'm a Capricorn.
Nice.
I play guitar and sing in the band.
I'm Leaf, I play bass, and I'm a Cancer.
Ooh. Do you two get along? I don't know if those signs match up.
We do get along. Yeah, and we've got along for years, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I feel like being in a band with someone is one step sexually removed from dating them.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know.
Yeah. I mean, definitely breakups in bands are actually worse than romantic relationships.
Way, way worse.
I would say male friend breakups are the worst type of breakups.
But the makeup jams are the best.
Oh, yeah. Wait, you guys got back together and didn't even do a makeup jam? Tell me about ex-cops. What's the story?
It's a project that's about a year and a half, maybe 2 years tops old. Me and my friend Dan Shapiro started to do some demos in a small room in Bushwick. Really dismal area right near the Woodhull Hospital.
Oh, that area is.
It's the worst. It's just the worst. So all we did was just kind of hole up and record these demos. And it started from a hobby. It didn't become like a thing. And got a band together. And soon it turned into a five-piece thing that was doing an album and was recording on a record label.
And who are the other members that are here? Shout them out.
Amelie Brune. She sings with me. She's going to start playing keyboard soon.
Is she going to get that affected keyboard singer girl band look thing going on?
She has that.
Oh, it's done.
Yeah, I think that's already done. It's already
okay. Yeah. I'm just making sure. That's a prerequisite.
That's in the bag. Yeah.
Okay.
It's very Stereo Lab. And then Kai Kennedy on guitar.
Okay.
Sam Bear on drums.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's a really cool lineup. Like those guys have all essentially been the band of ex-cops since the very beginning.
And the whole band has known each other for about 8 years to 3 years.
Do you find that friendship adds to the tightness of the band?
Yeah, definitely, completely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys can just go out and have beers and play and doesn't feel like even work?
Well, I think there's just a rapport between everybody that is, conducive to being able to, play a show together and look over. And you're having fun, you know?
We definitely had guys who were not old friends in the band, just kind of not the same.
Do you find that it's the reference points are not there or something like that for music and other things and other cultural influences?
I think there's also like an implicit trust, you know, like you're standing on stage with somebody, you want to know that they have your back. I think if they're a friend of yours in it, you feel that more than if they're not, you know.
Yeah. So you guys have been around for a year and a half, and what are the shows like? You know, what do you guys got?
We just played a pretty sick show at the Seaport last week.
Saw the photos, looking good.
Yeah.
Great venue.
Night before it burnt down, almost.
I was there for the fire.
Yeah.
Were you really?
It was.
It looked a lot more terrifying than I read about.
It was the biggest fire I've seen of something that wasn't supposed to be on fire.
Whoa. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. The best, and we talked about this last week, was the first response is actually a guy on a jet ski who's doing donuts trying to get water up on the thing. But the fact that it was wood, you know, all of a sudden you start seeing these flames shooting out from underneath. It's not just above, like the whole thing.
Really
it
crazy.
Was crazy.
Yeah. And like a Dippin' Dots right in the middle of it.
I think isn't that what caught on fire? Was it the machine?
That was like the rumor, but I think it was like some wire, but I like it better that way.
Yeah.
Dippin' Dots caught on fire.
So you were playing the amazing long-standing festival.
Great to play a big stage with actual good sound guys.
They're the best. Those guys have been doing it for years.
Super nice guys.
Maybe the best sounding stage we'd ever been on.
Yeah, they're incredible.
And what could someone expect from a live ex-cop show?
I guess we try to sound like the record, but it comes out sounding a bit more, I hate the word, bandy. I guess because most of our recordings are kind of like lo-fi.
They're all. I think you know, not to toot our own horn, but I think that everybody's a serious player. So there's a real dynamic on stage that I think is also captured on the record. But there's some bands that you see live and you could just as easily sit at home with the album. You
of
know?
Course.
Yeah, and I think that's not true.
Which was like definitely our first few shows.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Like really kind of bad. But we've gotten to that point where it's pretty solid now.
All right, well, let's hear it. Let's hear how solid it is. Mm. Put you right on the spot. Here we go. X-Cops live on Snacky Tunes. What's the first song?
This is called Separated. It's on the new album that's coming out pretty soon.
I thought you were letting me take a solo. I was
like,
oh, cool.
Yeah, word.
Thanks, dude.
Awesome. So, to put a pause on the band for a second, let's talk a little bit about Donna.
Yeah.
And the restaurant that happens, that you're part of, your owner.
Yeah.
And tell us all about it.
Well, I've been bartending for several years, basically to pay the bills while I was pursuing music. And it got to a point in time where I decided I didn't want to do it for other people. And I had come up with a concept that I thought was strong enough to pursue on my own. And I found a space that I totally fell in love with in an area that I thought needed something like that.
And what area is that?
South Williamsburg.
Okay. What's the address?
It's 27 Broadway.
Okay.
Right at the corner of Dunham Place, which is like one of the smallest streets in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I was bartending at Marlowe and Sons, which is right down the street there on Broadway.
Place.
Yeah, which is an amazing place.
Institution, if you will.
Definitely, definitely. And pioneers on the south side. And I would get off of work and there was nowhere to get a good drink or a bite to eat.
Wasn't at the place you just worked at.
Exactly, yeah. Well, and plus they close at 12, 12:30.
Right.
It's a restaurant. It's not a bar. It doesn't go late night. And then the bars that were available to me in the community, I thought, to an extent, there's like a snobbishness that comes with the classic cocktail thing that I think is, I don't know. I think it's kind of played out, you know. And I think if you walk up to a bar, you should be able to get a beer and a shot, especially in Brooklyn, you know, and yeah. Or a well-made Manhattan, and that's what of I course. Wanted to pursue.
It's the high low and the low brow.
Exactly. Yeah, but both, not middle brow. Like it's both high and low.
You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. That middle, that's the middling is where the bad stuff
exactly.
is.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so Jessica Wilson used to be at Prune Avoci.
That's correct.
She's
yeah.
your chef.
That's right. Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I'm eating pizza. It's too delicious. So, if I remember correctly, you had a dream about Donna, right?
I did, yeah. I was originally going to name it something else, and then that name got stolen by another business.
What was it?
Pilgrims. I was going to name it Pilgrims.
Oh, yeah.
And then that surf shop opened up on Wythe and North 3rd, right, and right, I was like, right, well, right. back to the drawing board. And then I had this...
Back to the surfboard.
Yeah, totally. I had this dream that I was walking down the street towards the bar, and Donna was on the sign outside of it, and then I walked inside and I woke up and I felt really happy about that, and I didn't know why. And then I started that week, I had a couple of like weird there's like weird synchronicity with it. So I was like I rewatched La Bamba and the song Oh Donna came on, and I was like, huh,
too many signs.
and then I was talking to some guy, and I was saying you know, I think I want to call it Donna. And he's like, oh, that's really cool. And I was like, why is that cool? He's like, because Donna means woman in Italian. And I was like, that's the
done.
Name. Yeah.
But it's not Italian food, though, is
no,
it?
No, it's not. No, it's Central American cuisine.
Right, right, right. We're going to talk about one quick dish and we'll get back to the song. Yeah. Pig Face Terrine?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Go on.
So Pig Face Terrine is actually akin to what, you know, what people refer to like as head cheese.
Right.
But it's a less gelatinous version of that. So we actually do get whole heads of pig in-house, brine them, and then cook the meat down, and then create terrines, you know, which is the shape of it's a pate. It's basically like a rough pate, and the flavor is incredible. And generally, with you know those who are meat eaters and enjoy you know that off cuts of meat, you're going to find a lot of flavor in the exteriors, the extremities of animals. So face and feet and tails tend to have the most. The most concentrated flavors of those animals, like, you know, oxtail, pig's feet, and that kind of stuff.
Love it. Good bar bites.
Yeah, great, great bar food, you know.
All right. Well, let's rip another song.
Yeah,
let's what do we got? You all set with the power cord or the cord?
I think it should be cool. I just won't move an inch at all.
Yeah.
Awesome.
This is, you want to do The Millionaire?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah,
all right, here we go. X-Cops yeah. Live.
Never happened.
Awesome. The mythical sound effect. So what do you guys got coming up? I know you got the album, right?
Album September 25th. A show at Mercury Lounge July 26th.
That's this Thursday.
Yeah, with Eternal Summers. They're a great band. And hopefully touring pretty soon.
Amazing. Where are you going to go on tour? Or where do you want to go on tour?
Where I want to go on tour, well, hopefully Japan. I'd love to tour France. Just go to France.
Go to France?
Yep.
What do you guys, being friends and all that into food, what's your eating plan on the road?
It's a tough thing. Like, we actually talked about that. It's hard to eat well on the road.
Well, in the States.
In the States, yeah.
It's brutal.
It's good in the wintertime because you can get a cooler.
Yeah.
And everything kind of stays. But in the summertime, it's like, unfortunately, there's some subway trips.
Well, the irony of it is that when you're touring in the middle of America, you'll be in smack dab in the middle of a farm, and the only food you have access to is like a truck stop or a McDonald's.
I know.
And you're like, what's wrong with this picture?
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, it's broken. This whole thing is broken.
Where do you guys source your food for Donna?
We get all of our meats from Hudson Valley Small Farm Meats upstate, and then the produce comes from local farmers that Jessica has relationships with and has had relationships with for a long time. We're doing like all of our in-house like pickling of vegetables and all those kind of things. She's awesome with veggies.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's always the...
There should be a blog, right, about like touring bands and places to eat.
Oh, totally.
You know, I would say we've interviewed quite a few bands, and I don't know how to say this. Unfortunately, it's almost always the same answer.
Which is?
Nah.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's horrible.
It's you know, I know that there is like a network, and I know that like vegetarians and vegans have a really good insider's tip.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that of where to eat. But for the most part, in America, I have yet to be blown away by some story that wasn't either this promoter whose house we're staying at, but nobody's like, oh, I mean, you know, if you're there for enough time, you can go to different places. Like, obviously, if you came to play in New York and you had enough time, Lower East Side, Brooklyn, no matter what, yeah. You know, if playing Music Hall Williamsburg, just dip on down to Donna's, right?
Yeah, totally.
But for the most part, it's just sort of crap.
Yeah, I mean, on the road, like, you're going to have to just eat, like, bagels and stuff like that. But, I mean, like, hopefully if you get to a town, there's usually a place you can find that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, it depends. You know, and sometimes you get lucky. You get, like, Lawrence, Kansas has amazing food for whatever reason. They have a really cool... Well, I guess there's a college. Yeah, like...
University of Kentucky, isn't it, right?
That's right.
The Jayhawks.
And they were, you know... I think that's what it comes down to, there being a pocket of people who are interested in good food for there to be...
Yeah,
outlets for it.
I mean, that's the one benefit of playing in Europe, or one of the bigger benefits, that the venue usually has a meal for you, or the promoter. It's really much more mixed in.
Yeah, and it's New York. I mean, within a few blocks, you're going to find something.
You're going to find something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's better than getting Punjabi?
Totally.
Before?
Totally.
Well, maybe not right before you play.
I would say before.
Maybe after you play, then you go get Punjabi, because it's pretty heavy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then what do you guys got coming up for the restaurant the rest of summer? I know you guys started doing brunch.
Yeah, we started doing brunch. We just did our first weekend of brunch, which was really awesome. The space itself, you know, has this kind of Spanish colonial vibe and a lot of like white walls. And so opening the space to people in the daytime was... really fun for us, and Jessica's menu is really, really impressive. She's pulled out a couple of items that I thought were really creative and interesting, like an oxtail sloppy joe, which is incredible.
I want that right now.
Yeah. It's really good. And then you know, like baked eggs and other kind of like standards. We're doing like a pre-fee, $18 gets you couple of poached eggs, some Papa's Bravas, which is our version of like a roasted potato.
Love them.
Yeah.
Well, I would say one of the best tapas dish out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we do ours a little bit differently. They're all actually whole baby potatoes that are then smashed on the plancha.
and
seasoned, and then you get a side. You know, there's like a series of sides, and
I'm assuming a drink is in there somewhere.
You get coffee or tea, and then a Bloody Mary. Which
How's
is
your Bloody Mary?
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally incredible.
All right, let's take me through that, and then we'll rip out one last song.
We got, you know, I mean, it has the all the usual suspects of like Worcestershire and you know, tomato juice, but then we have fresh pressed ginger inside of it. At more lime juice than you would see in a traditional recipe, and then ancho chili smashed into it. So it's which gives you actually a little bit of sweetness and spice.
Yeah, it's a little bit of smokiness. I would imagine
exactly.
As well.
Yeah, yeah.
You still have the shot and the meat thing.
Oh yeah, the beef and bourbon shot, which is. Basically, crazy. We took the beef and bourbon cocktail and deconstructed it, so you get like a cube of seared beef, a shot of whiskey, and then a consommé on the side. And
it's very manly.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And then you automatically grow a couple hairs on your chest.
Right? Actually, automatic beard.
Automatic beard. That's when you know you're going out on a Saturday night. You need to get that beard up to
totally
to full
up
form.
To snuff.
Just in case.
Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't you give us the nuts and bolts of X-Cops and Donna, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff.
On Twitter, I'm pretty sure it's just X-Cops with the no space. And Facebook, I'm pretty sure it's the same. And XCopsBand.com is a website, but we really are more active on Twitter.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Donna is DonnaBKLYN.com. And same thing, Facebook and Twitter. Just find us at DonnaBKLYN. That's the handle for both.
Amazing. Well, thank you guys so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Jessica, thank you so much as well. And stay tuned. We'll be back next week in full force with I Have No Idea because I don't have the schedule in front of me. Shout out to Roberta. Shout out to Heritage. Looking forward to the Roberta's Tiki Disco dance party this week, which is going to be...
Yeah.
It's noon to midnight. I'm not going to be there for the whole
Rockaway?
Time. Rockaway? No, here.
Oh.
They do their block party out on Moore Street.
Nice. Oh, cool.
I'm already tired.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can do that. And then the House of House Birdwatchers on Sunday at K&G Williamsburg, if you will. What's the last song you're going to take us out with?
You Are a Lion, I Am a Lamb.
Awesome. Well, here we go. X-Cops, Live with Snacky Tunes. We will see you next week.
About food, we talk about music with on the Bulls, Snacky Tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without the support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.